Chapter 6, newspaper articles. We subscribe to the Fargo Forum, and in response to a couple of emails back and forth with a columnist named Bob Lind, I submitted a couple of articles to him that he published. The first one was, of course, this is about Bonnie and I. The first one is, couple reunites 50 years after last date together. This is written in June of 2012. When Roger and Bonnie Butler were married, Roger's brother Bruce read a poem he wrote titled 50 Years Between Dates. Here's the story behind that poem. Roger was born in Jamestown, North Dakota. No, he got that wrong. He was born in Grand Forks. But his parents moved to Bemidji, Minnesota in 1948 when they bought KBUN, a radio station there. Roger had broken his knee while tobogganing in Jamestown, but that didn't affect my eyesight, he says, and I quickly ascertained that my freshman class at Bemidji High School had three extremely good-looking girls. Bonnie Morton was one of them. But it took him 2.5 years to work up the nerve to approach her. The magic moment happened after a football game during a dance in the cafeteria gym, he says. I took that famous, well, all she can do is say no advice and asked her if she'd like to dance, and she said yes, and love was quickly in the air. Later, Roger took Bonnie to the senior prom, and the romance blossomed despite an unfortunate incident when they double-dated with their friends Jim Erickson and Audrey Bull, riding in Jim's car. Before Roger left the house, his dad warned him, because I was a serial curfew abuser, Roger admits, that he better be home by midnight or out he'd go. Well, the two couples wound up walking along a beach that night when Jim and Audrey had a disagreement. Suddenly, Audrey grabbed Jim's car keys and pitched them into the lake. That led to the kids taking off their shoes and socks, rolling up their pant legs, and searching the lake for those keys. They found them, but by the time Roger got home, it was 12:10 a.m., and he was in deep trouble. Roger's dad, fed up, said his son would have to leave home, but because he had a good excuse, he could stay until after graduation a week later. So Roger and Bonnie graduated. Roger worked for the Green Giant Company in Le Sueur, Minnesota, bummed with friends around the country, then enrolled at Carleton College, Northfield, Minnesota. Bonnie and I had one more date, but the magic was gone, he says, even though I carried the torch for a long time. The next time they met was at the 25th reunion of Bemidji High School's 1951 class in 1976. Both had married someone else. They spoke briefly, but that was until another 25 years went by and they met again at the 50th reunion of their class. I might mention here that at the 25th reunion, Bonnie came over and asked me if I wanted to meet her husband. And I said, sure. Went over there and she introduced me to Harold Giroux. And he took one look at me and says, oh, so that's the Roger Butler I've heard so much about. Bonnie claims she never did mention my name in front of him, but you got to question that. By the time of the 50th reunion, Bonnie was a widow living in Hillsborough, and Roger was in the process of getting divorced. We talked for a long time, Roger says, and then she had to drive a lady friend back to her motel. I started to give her a little goodbye kiss, and she grabbed me and planted a good one on me. That sealed the deal. And after about 2 weeks later, I called her from Phoenix, where I'd moved in 1960. In June 2002, they were married, and Brother Bruce read that poem. Roger and Bonnie now live in a mobile home near Detroit Lakes, Minnesota, which puts them close to cabins where Bonnie's daughters live. So this boy meets girl story has a happy ending despite that 50-year wait between dates. Later on, there's another story, I think probably about 2 years later. It touches on some of the same stuff, but I'm going to read it here anyway. This says, Blizzard Babies Drift Back Together, written by the same Bob Lind. Of course, it was stuff that I submitted to him and he kind of edited it. "'Tis the season for blizzards. You never know when one will hit, but when one does, you can be sure some stories will come out of it, such as this one from 1933. It's a story of two people who were born about 8 hours apart during the blizzard and who eventually became married. that Roger and Bonnie Butler of Detroit Lakes and during the winter of Scottsdale, Arizona. Roger was born about 9 p.m. January 28th that year in Deaconess Hospital, Grand Forks. And Bonnie was born about 5 a.m. January 29th in rural Velva, North Dakota, which is about 200 miles from Grand Forks, 200 miles west. There was a terrible blizzard in Velva, so I assume the conditions were about the same in Grand Forks, Rod says. Bonnie, the daughter of Bert and Doris Morton, was born 3 months prematurely. Because of the storm, it was impossible for a doctor to get to her parents' home, and her father delivered her. Although the delivery went fine, her dad knew little Bonnie needed an incubator help, so he put her in an old cracker-type box, stoked up the wood stove, opened the oven, and put the box and Bonnie on the oven door, and it worked. But the snowdrifts were so deep that it was 3 days before her oldest brother, Buck, age 12, could ride the 2 or 3 miles into Velvet on a horse to fetch a doctor. Years later, the family physician told her she was fortunate to be alive. Bert, by the way, was a stonemason who built the fireplaces and at the lodge and other buildings in Itasca State Park in Minnesota during the Depression. Bonnie was his and Doris' fifth and last child. And being the baby, she was Daddy's little girl, Rod says. There always was a connection between the two. Being delivered by him must have played a part. Rod's parents, Ed and Gwen Butler, Ed was a longtime English and journalism teacher at Grand Forks Central High School. When Rod was 11, his folks moved to Fargo, where Ed worked for the Office of Price Administration during World War II. When the war ended, Ed became the public relations man for Farmers Union in Jamestown, North Dakota. Then in 1948, he and Gwen bought the nearly defunct radio station KVUN in Bemidji. And it was in Bemidji High School where Rod met Bonnie. It took me 2 or 3 years to get up the nerve to ask her, Rod says, but he did, and she said yes. And they went on to become sweethearts in their senior year of 1950-51. But problems developed and they broke up. They met again at their 25th class reunion when both were married to someone else. They wouldn't see each other again until their 50th class reunion in 2001. Bonnie, who lived in Hillsboro, North Dakota, and whose husband, Harold Giroux, had died, had 4 daughters, and I won't bother to read all that, and 9 grandchildren and 5 great-grandchildren. Roger, then of Phoenix, was in the process of getting a divorce with no children. They stayed in contact, and in 2002, the girl and that boy who were born in the same blizzard in 1933 became husband and wife. There's another article I submitted. I think this was the first one, actually, to Bob Lind. You know, it's about grandparents and great-grandparents. I'm going to read this into it. This story began in Dakota Territory days. It's a story of Edward C. and Mary Butler, as recorded by their son, Will. It's a story of homesteading, of heartache, of a town that no longer exists, of grandparents who are fondly remembered, even if Grandma wasn't a good cook. Will died in 1955. His grandson, Roger of Hillsboro, North Dakota, sent them in the memories Will had written down. They start with Will's parents, Edward and Mary, who moved from Maine to Nevada with their children, Alice, 5, and Will, 3, in 1876. The next year, Alice died. In 1882, Edward, Mary, and young Will went to the much-publicized territory of North of Dakota by train via the Twin Cities. Part of the time, they lived in St. Paul with people who lived across the street from James J. Hill, founder of the Great Northern Railroad. Edward left his wife and son in the cities and went with a friend to North Dakota to find land. Their destination was a town they had heard had a wonderful future, Mardell, east of Cooperstown. Edward picked up about 160 acres through a soldier's claim. He was a veteran in the Civil War. He could have gone farther west, but he didn't because, Will wrote, Western Dakota was considered of doubtful quality for grain farming. By then, his wife in St. Paul became ill. Edward hurried to her and determined it would be best if she went back to Maine with her son to be with her family until he arranged suitable housing for them. But she died there. I might add here that that Edward was known as E.C. to everybody. E.C. received a postcard in the mail from a sister-in-law that told him that his wife had died the night before. Of course, there wasn't any telephone and, I guess, telegraph there, so he had to get it by a postcard. E.C. had to sell some of his land and raise money to travel to Maine for a funeral. Then he returned to the Mardell area and obtained some other land. The butler's son, Will, graduated from Mayville, North Dakota Normal School about 1892. A normal school was sort of like a junior college, I think. Then bought a half section of land near Cooperstown in 1895 when he was 23. He married Idella, a teacher from Vermont, in 1897 when they eloped. They moved to Grandin, North Dakota, where Will owned the International Harvester dealership from 1929 to 1950, then retired and moved to Stephen, Minnesota, where their daughter Frances Swanson lived. Frances' husband, H.C., owned the Stephen Messenger weekly newspaper. Will died in 1955, Idella in 1960. Mardell, where Will's father homesteaded? Well, the railroad didn't come through. Everyone pulled out and the town vanished. Rogers, the son of the butler's son, Edward W., who taught English and journalism at Grand Forks Central High School, worked for the Office of Price Administration in Fargo, did public relations for the State Farmers Union out of Jamestown, owned a radio station in Bemidji, Minnesota, and wound up in Phoenix, where he died in 1965. As to Will and Idella, Rod says they were wonderful grandparents, but he tells a story about them when he got stuck with them and visited with them in Grandin. Grandma was not known as a great cook, Rod says, but on this particular Sunday, she made chicken and dumplings. I remember, Rod says, the chicken seemed to be a tough old rooster boiled for hours, and the dumplings, when cut open, were raw dough inside. His mother told him of another time when she and Edward, her husband Edward, were living with them early in their marriage, and they had a Sunday dinner where Grandpa Will, always a true gentleman and a true gentleman, was always dressed in a suit and vest, but on this day Will's wife cooked what must have been spectacularly bad. Rog was told by his mother, for right in the middle of it, Granddad stood up, gathered up the four corners of the tablecloth, marched out to the front porch, and threw the dinner out on the lawn. What happened next is lost, Rod says, but I assume they went in search of a restaurant.